At 7:20 on the other end of the phone line is Senator Dick Durbin. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm just fine. You know, but I've heard more about semiconductors in this past month than I think I have in the past 10 years. They're apparently used in just about everything, including automobiles. I'm still not entirely sure what they do, to be honest, but I do know there's a shortage of them. And recently, the Senate passed an increasingly rare bipartisan bill, in part aimed at making sure that it doesn't happen again. Officially, it's called the Innovation and Competition Act. I've also heard it called the China Competitiveness Bill. Either way, it would pump about $200 billion into scientific research over the next 5 years. So what does that money get us?
Well, let me say, I'm the same way you are. I'm a liberal arts lawyer. What do I know about engineering and computers and computer chips? But I've been forced to come to grips with the reality that we are dependent on those computer chips for just about everything you buy today that's electronic, and certainly cars are. Now, I'll tell you the big surprise. I was talking to the people who own what used to be Fiat Chrysler, because they've closed down their Belvidere, Illinois plant, and almost 2,000 workers are sitting at home because they don't have these semiconductor chips. And I said to the fellow with the company, how much do these things cost? Well, let me see. And he called me back and he said, between $4 and $10. I said, that seems to me like a screw in a bolt. You know, I was expecting you to say 400 to 8,000. Well, he says some of them are, but the ones we use are really basic. And I said, you can't get the basic ones? That's the problem, he says. We have 800 of them. We need thousands of them to put people back to work to build these cars. So here's the problem. There was a time when the United States owned this industry. We had 39% of the world production of semiconductor chips. Then we got lazy, took our eye off the ball, and you know what happened? The production of these chips went overseas, primarily to China and to Taiwan. And they decided they would put the quotas on the supply that they were going to build, and they would decide who would receive them. And we are on the losing end of their most current decisions. We don't have the chips. We can't build the cars. The workers can't go to work. We see the problem. So in steps Congress and says, we're going to do something about it. We just passed a bipartisan bill that said we are going to make America's own semiconductor chip industry. $50 billion. It's a big bet. But when you look at the entire economy and its dependence on this, you realize we've got to do it. And when it comes to innovation and research, chips aren't the end of the story. Artificial intelligence, robotics, you name it. We've been coming in second best to China for too darn long, and this bill says we're going to invest in America's future.
More investing in America is infrastructure. Negotiations between the president and the Republicans seem to have broken down. The West Virginia senator saying that the president had moved the goalpost, and walked away from the table. President Biden says he'll start negotiating now with a more bipartisan group of lawmakers to see if they can agree on anything. Now, as that goes on, we're already hearing some rumblings that, you know, the Democrats basically wanting the president to cut bait at this point. They're having flashbacks to President Obama negotiating with Republicans on Obamacare. You know, he did give them a few things, and they still, not a single one voted for it. How would you advise the president to approach those negotiations?
Joe Biden said from the start, I want to sit at the table with Democrats and Republicans. Let's do this on a bipartisan basis. He came up with the American Rescue Plan. Your listeners remember that, I'm sure, because it ended up producing not only the vaccine, but distributing it across the United States to put an end to this pandemic. Then we had the cash payments to families, the $1,400, what a difference that made. Money for businesses to move forward. We didn't get a single Republican vote to support us. It was just all Democratic votes to get that done. But he didn't give up. The president said, now we're going to infrastructure. Let's try to do this on a bipartisan basis. He just spent 2 months with Senator Shelley Capito. She's a friend of mine. She's a Republican senator, but it went nowhere. They couldn't agree on the amount of money to spend or how we would pay for this infrastructure. Now another group has emerged. There are about 10 of them involved in it, 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans. I met with one of them this morning. They're meeting in about an hour and a half to see if we can reach an agreement. My advice to them is do the best you can do to get a bipartisan agreement, but move on it. Let's get moving. We've wasted 2 months in a negotiation that didn't end well. Let's really get invested. If we don't build the infrastructure for the future, our businesses, our farmers are all going to pay a price.
You know, the recent bipartisan Senate committee recently released their report that found a great number of intelligence missteps leading up to the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. Now, tell me, are those findings really just kind of suggestions on the committee's part, or do they have some teeth behind them? And would you still support that broader investigation like a 9/11 style commission?
You know, when I come to work here in the Capitol, I walk by every single day men and women in uniform who are part of the Capitol Police Force. These are the ones who are on the front line fighting this insurrectionist mob that hit this building on January 6th. Five people died. 140 of these officers were attacked. And they have written a letter to the members of Congress saying, would you please investigate what led up to this mess and this terrible, just disgraceful attack on the Capitol? Unfortunately, we can't get the support on the Republican side to do that. Why wouldn't we want a balanced commission, Democrats and Republicans, equal numbers, to look into this to make sure it never happens again? I think we owe it to the police to do it, and I'm supporting it. I hope we eventually get around to doing it.
We're speaking with Senator Dick Durbin. Last Friday, June 4th, was Gun Violence Awareness Day. A lot of folks wore orange on that day. You might have seen it on social media around the office. Now, you recently co-sponsored a resolution in the Senate to make June Gun Violence Awareness Month, and you've been quoted as saying that gun violence in the U.S. is a pandemic and a national embarrassment. So if we stick with that medical metaphor of a pandemic, what's the vaccine, and how do you convince folks to take it?
I'll tell you what it takes. We have to have responsible gun owners, and there are plenty of them listening to your show this morning, and people across our state, and responsible law enforcement to step up and say, all right, we're going to respect your Second Amendment rights, but we're going to make sure that these guns don't get in the hands of the wrong people. We want to make sure felons don't buy them, people who are mentally unstable don't buy them, and we want to make sure they're stored safely and responsibly, and that people who own them use them responsibly. If those two groups, the responsible gun owners of America, and of course including Illinois, and responsible law enforcement will step up and speak up, I think we can get this thing off dead center and moving forward. We've got to have those people saying the words that we can have responsible gun legislation that doesn't inhibit our Second Amendment rights.
With the Senate this closely divided, talk has again been revived of either doing away with the filibuster rule or really changing it. I think everybody still gets that image in their head of Jimmy Stewart, you know, and Mr. Smith goes to Washington yelling at Claude Rains, talking for hours until he's hoarse. But I don't think that really happens anymore, and I believe that's one of the reasons you said you would support some reform. So first, tell me really what happens when somebody filibusters these days, and then what do you think should happen?
It isn't like the movie. Basically, people say, well, now put me down on the list of people filibustering, and then they take off and go home back to Pennsylvania or Arizona. And you think to yourself, well, Jimmy Stewart had to stand at his desk until he dropped. And these people are stopping the Senate from taking up measures and doing it by telephone, by long distance. That doesn't make any sense at all. If you have something that you feel strongly enough that you want to stop the business of the Senate, then by goodness, you ought to be on the floor of the Senate making your case to see if others support you. And if they don't, step aside. We've got work to do. We have allowed the Senate to be dragged down time and again by this filibuster on measures that are definitely needed across this country right now. And I think the only way to have any future is to have a filibuster that counts, and people who are using it have to really invest their own personal time to show that they're for real.
Do you think we could get him to do a Jimmy Stewart impression during the filibuster?
I finally got to meet the man before he passed away. He came here one day for a hearing, and I went up and met him. Pretty famous guy.
Yeah. And, you know, the more serious, the hopes the Democrats had for the People Act, which deals with some changes to election law, were just about dashed earlier this week when Senator Manchin said that he wouldn't support it any longer. Do you think a deal can be made there, or is that dead in the water at this point?
I haven't given up. Joe Manchin's a friend of mine, and I know where he's coming from, and I don't agree with him on some basics, but I respect him. And in the Senate, you know, 50-50 Senate, any senator can stop the train. And if we want to get the train back on the tracks and moving, we better sit down with Joe and talk about what he can accept and what he does want to see. Here's our bottom line. When it comes to voting, I want to make sure that every eligible voter has an opportunity to vote that really fits in with their family and job responsibilities. I think that is realistic. That's the reason people vote absentee, for example. and I think we ought to be making that available across the nation. Unfortunately, state after state is coming down the other side, making it more difficult to vote, requiring IDs, limiting the time that you can vote in advance, where you can vote, and that sort of thing. I don't think that's in the best interest of a democracy. Full participation of every legally eligible voter ought to be our goal.
You know more about the Constitution than I do, but the biggest criticism I hear from most Republicans is that voting is a state issue and it shouldn't be held at the federal level.
Well, of course, the states make the provisions, but there is an express provision in the Constitution that gives the federal government, the Congress, the authority to establish circumstances for voting. So there's no question on a constitutional basis that this can be done.
We've been speaking with Senator Dick Durbin this morning. And before I let you go, is there something that's flying maybe under the radar that you'd like to address? So much of the news media is still taken up by COVID. What's something going on that we should know about that maybe we're not hearing a lot about?
Well, I can tell you that this innovation and research that is part of this bill is something that I've been working on for years with Roy Blunt, Republican of Missouri. And I will just tell you there are things happening in medical research which are very encouraging. And if we consistently fund medical research, it is not only going to create good research positions at universities around the United States, but it's going to lessen the cost of healthcare in America. There are things that we face which are heartbreaking that families have to deal with. But I think we can come through with the research that can make a difference in their lives. We proved it with these vaccines. Think about how quickly we responded in creating these vaccines. It didn't happen just by chance. It was a determined investment in research, medical research, for many, many years. It finally paid off. I believe in the future of this country, but I believe we can't hold back and wait for the world to come to our door. We have to go aggressively into this world and be leaders.
Senator Dick Durbin, it's an honor to speak to everybody that comes on this radio station, but this kid from Ava sure does. Thank you for his time, sir.
Well, my honor to be with you. Thanks a lot.